Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation. Welcome to another episode of the Talking About Platforms podcast. My name is Philip Meyer, and I am here with my regular co-hosts, Daniel Trabucchi and Tommaso Buganza. Hi, Daniel. Hi, Tommaso.
Hi, Philip.
Hi.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. And the listeners to of the podcast are probably curious who is the guest for today. And today we have two guests and also no guest. because Daniel and Tommaso are guests on the podcast, and I have the pleasure to talk with the two of them about the new book, The Digital Phoenix Effect. So before we go into the content of the book, and I also would like to understand better why you wrote the book and why now, of course, the usual question, right? So typically, Daniel or Tommaso, one of you asked them. So I think it's the first time for me to ask them. what is a platform to you, and how did you end up studying platforms?
It's strange to be on the other side. It's easier to start with the second part of the question. So how did I end up doing this? Well, it all started many years ago because I was living in the United States, and I was doing research, but I didn't really have a topic. So I was looking for a new topic. And in the meantime, I was doing whatever things because I was looking around. And there was this application that it's called Zombies Run. I don't know if you're familiar with it. You can go running, and while you run at a certain point, you meet a pack of zombies, and they try to catch you. So you need to accelerate and to escape. And so I started, looking and digging into a set of apps like these, like Nike or there was the Runkeeper one and so on. And I understood that they were somehow collecting data and using data, and everything started like this. So I ended up looking at complex value creation systems in which instead of having just one company providing something to somebody else, you got, one company with different customers, and it all started like this. So what are platforms to me? And I think that this is going to be part of a discussion we're going to have today, because it's partially in the book. They are value creation mechanisms. So I started at looking at them like, apps or nice things and, cool stuff like Uber or Airbnb at the beginning. And now I am conceiving them as a way to create value that is not new, but still largely unused by many companies.
I would say, I hope you agree, we're quite aligned on the definition. So I would not go through that part. Well, how I got to study platforms, it's definitely because of Tommaso. He was my professor. Actually, he was a guest lecturer in a course I was following, and he actually said the story of Zombies Run. And I thought that professor was quite cool, and I wrote him for a dissertation. And then the story is a bit longer than that. He was not replying to emails, and then at a certain point, he replied absolutely by chance just to my email. And I started my dissertation with him, and here I am, 12 years later, still talking about the same cases and still talking about platforms.
Great, thank you so much. Yeah, now the title of your book is The Digital Phoenix Effect. You just said that you're like researching and working on the topics for 12 years. How many phoenixes did you see during that time, and why are you writing this book with this title right now?
Well, I'll answer to this bridging a bit with the previous one. Tommaso back then was professor of innovation management. His main focus was technological innovation. But in terms of projects, in terms of, you know, the environment he was working in, was mainly established companies needing to do innovation of certain kind. And he fell in love with platforms, I fell in love with platforms, and we start studying startups for the first time. Our original cases were Strava, were Airbnb and Uber, as all the people back then. But then with my dissertation, the goal became, I wanted to understand how platforms can be a tool to foster innovation, can actually help companies in fostering innovation. I guess I lied a bit in the conclusion of the thesis. There was not the answer there yet, but now I think we have it. 5-6 years ago, we start meeting the first Phoenixes, the first companies that actually managed to develop something new based on a platform model. The first one was probably here in Italy, Telepass, the tolling, the company managing the tolling system in the highways. And for a bunch of years, I must say, the Phoenix we met, so the companies that have been able to transform their organization or their asset into something different, were very few. Telepass here in Italy, John Deere in the States. Thanks to Eric that we actually interviewed here in the podcast, we met Klöckner in Germany. But then, there were a few marketplaces here and there, but nothing really cool. Over the last 3 years, we start finding many more cases. And that's where the new book come in. If the first book is all about platforms as a concept, as a tool, this book is all about legacy companies that find a way to use platforms to foster innovation.
That's super interesting. I mean, you know, I basically got interested in B2B platforms and like the overarching question of my PhD dissertation was, can B2B platforms adopt the, let's say, B2C platform thinking, or to talk in your terms? The evidence showed, or the empirical work showed, it's not that easy. But if it's not that easy, what do they have to do different? And now you say, over the course of the last 3 years, you see more and more Phoenixes. My question is, why? Is this because the B2B, the legacy companies understand it better? Is it like a market-driven trend? So what is your kind of analysis of why did you see more of these companies?
Well, I think this is a wild guess. So we can tell you what we see. And so we analyzed all the companies in Standard & Poor's 500 list, so the 500 companies. And, you know, some of them are basically our platform, are natively platform. So we are talking about Amazon or, you know, companies like this, or, you know, go Alphabet. And, you know, besides that, we analyzed all the others, and we still have more than 480. And we found that many of them are talking about platforms. And so we asked ourselves the same question. So why are they doing so? Why all of these legacy companies? We're talking about pharmaceutical companies. We are talking about oil and gas, retail companies. So pharmaceutical companies, so running pharmacies. And why are they doing so? Well, I think that, especially in the United States, what's happening is that what happened in the last 10 years is that if you look at the top level of this Standard & Poor's 500 list, in the last 10 years, nearly all the top 10, top 20 are platforms. And you got some, you know, very huge companies like General Electric that they are no more in the top 10. Now you got almost all only platform. You know, you got Microsoft, you got Apple. In a certain way, I think that the reaction by these companies, the old companies, the not digital companies, was, what is happening? So now we got this phenomenon of $1 trillion companies. How is happening? So why are these people? They arrived, you know, we cannot say that they arrived from nothing because, you know, Microsoft has been here for a long time, but what's happening? Why are they having these incredible results? And it was probably quite simple at a certain point to understand that the mechanism that they're using is easily scalable. So you can grow up with incredible numbers without increasing the cost so much. And this is somehow justifying all of these incredible results. And they couldn't stay behind. So the question was for them, what can we do to compete with these people? Because otherwise they are eating everything. So at a certain point, Amazon will start, is already doing it, so delivering drugs and pharmaceutical goods. And then it could be fresh food. And so what are all the other companies doing? So how do you react? And I think that they started in a certain way to react, but going back to your question, I don't think they fully understood it. I think we are still in the process of understanding, because when we analyzed the companies, Standard & Poor's 500 companies, we found more than 800 cases in which these companies are declaring some kind of platforms. But then we analyzed all of them. And actually, we discovered that the large majority of these things that they call platforms are actually digital services. Great digital services, super nice digital services, brilliant digital, but still digital services. And if you've got a digital service, you cannot really scale in that way. So only few of them, still 140 cases, are actual platforms. So to make a long story short, I think that the competition became incredibly harsh. Legacy companies, so these platform-based companies be performing in such a way that they never imagined. So they had to ask themselves, what can we do? They understood the answer is probably in platforms, and they somehow tried to mimic it, to copy it. But we are still in the process of fully understanding what we're talking about. And that's the reason why we think this is the right time for the book, because many legacy companies probably now have got the feeling that they need to do something, but probably they have not fully understood yet how to do it. So that's where we try to put the book in this moment.
Okay, understood. Do you try to educate further those who did not fully understand it, or do you deliver some kind of success factors that those companies share that stay in the competition through running a platform?
I would probably say a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start from the success factor. Let's put it like this. In my opinion, the word platform became a buzzword after the platform revolution, after the book by Marshall and Geoff, and the huge success of Airbnb, Ubers, and all the others. And I guess there has been a bit the run after the platformization, even in B2B companies. But the effect there has been probably twofold. On the one hand, many marketplaces arise, especially after COVID, in my opinion. Leroy Merlin, IKEA, many retail brands, Walmart in the States, try to emulate that type of strategy, which is absolutely platform thinking, which works. But let me say, it's probably the most obvious transformation. Is like next to the original value proposition and the original user experience that those companies were offering. What happened over the last years is that a relatively small number of big companies found a way to do something truly different. We opened the book with three stories. We are very proud of saying that they are three European stories. We are proud about that because we probably lost as a continent the race in the platform world. The extreme vast majority of big platforms are coming from the States. There is something in Asia that is absolutely relevant in terms of value, but it's not that relevant in terms of number of big platforms. While in Europe, we have a few cases. They are amazing. But they are very, very few and not so huge in terms of market capitalization. While over the last years, let me say by chance, we found three cases that inspired us a lot. AXA, Siemens, and Eni. France, Germany, Italy. And we really like this happening by chance. AXA found a way to answer the needs to their commercial customers by mitigating risks, getting them in touch with third-party providers next to the traditional way of dealing with insurance in a moment in which climate change is making the risk management behind an insurance product challenging to be managed. And they found a way to use this platform as a starting point to gather data and to understand how the market is moving. So also having an internal implication. Let me also say that we got this case thanks to this podcast, because it generates a connection with someone highly involved in the project. Siemens saw a problem in digital transformation and transformed their hardware into an iPhone, into an innovation platform where other people can develop services. Eni found a way to support the sustainable transformation of their suppliers. We are talking about energy production, so not an easy industry, by creating a marketplace which is called OpenS that allow their suppliers to get in touch with third parties that offer training, certifications, consultancy for sustainable transformation. I think these three cases, being marketplaces in the end to a certain extent, are actually suggesting that platforms can be used in a very different way. And having this type of success stories is not saying a lot on how to do that, but is explaining that the why can be extremely wide and extremely powerful. And I must say, I'm very happy to have the chance to open the book with these three stories, because they are absolutely not what the usual reader, in my opinion, would expect from a book on platforms. Then actually in the book, there is also something on the how-to, but it's coming from a different type of research. Maybe I leave this to you. It's your topic.
Oh, well, I would say that in a certain way, the book is doing two different things. So the first part that is connected to what Daniel said is actually opening a lot the realm of possibilities. So what legacy firms told us and showed us is something that we didn't see coming. So we just understood it while we were looking at it. And it is that platforms can be used internally into these companies. So we are accustomed when we talk about when we talk about startups, we imagine typically platforms for every final user. In this case, the final user could be like in the case of Eni on OpenS, the final user is procurement. So they are not the real final customer of Eni doesn't see that. So it's a platform to serve an internal process. And AXA was the same. They were having a problem in pricing, their products. So it's an operational problem. It's operations, the real internal customer of it. So in a certain way, we were very excited when we understood that legacy firms can use platforms for not only for the final customer, but for internal customers. You can create internal platforms serving internal processes. But on the other side, we also realized that this was actually creating even a bigger problem for managers. So because now we were basically saying you can use a platform for whatever. Yeah, and then the question was, but if I can use something for whatever, what do I use it for? So it's like this idea of paradox of choice. You can do too many things. So what is the right thing to do? What is the first thing to do? And so we, in the second part of the book is composed by three different parts. And the second part of the book, we said, okay, now let's try to help them after we created the problem. So after we showed them all the possibilities, so let's help them in understanding what companies, legacy companies, typically do with platforms. And we identified five main business challenges. So five main problems that these 140 companies solved using platforms. And of course, the distribution is not all alike. So in some cases, there are more, some cases, there are less. But the business challenges are, well, the first one is how to create or you know, empower existing transactions. So there might be some transactions that are not working properly. And when you say that to a manager, do you have any transaction that is not working properly? Yeah, of course, I got a lot of them. Imagine all of the procurement and all of the complications in buying stuff around the world and stuff like that. Or it could be your customers are changing their needs too fast. And of course, you can answer them, but answering is probably asking you to do something that is not your core business. So to what extent you want to do it, to what extent you want to create an ecosystem around your company, including some answers that will make your final customer delighted, even if not provided directly by you. Another problem is that you might have innovation bottlenecks. So companies are great in doing innovation. We are talking about Standard & Poor's 500 companies, very big companies. So they got huge amount of money for R&D. Still, they cannot do everything. And in many cases, you might find that somebody outside can build on what you did in order to make your customer even happier. And of course, you're losing a part of the value created. But on the other side, if the customer really wants it, we'll have to buy your product. So it's, you know, it's the typical iOS kind of approach. And then the last two were more connected to data. When you, one of the main business challenge that these companies faced using platforms is about the huge quantity of data they have that are not fully exploiting. And you can unlock the value already in that data just using a platform. Or the last one that is the most fascinating is imagine you've got some strategic decisions to make. Imagine you need data to do that. And imagine you've got huge quantities of data, but you're always missing something. You're always missing that specific piece of data that connecting with all the others will make you, you know, comfortable in making your strategic decision. How do you get that data? So how do you harvest data, specific data, not how you use existing data? So basically, the second part of the book is about what these companies are doing. And the book is full with examples of companies in different industries solving these kind of problems, just to provide you with examples of what you can do. We are still not in the how, but now, you know, at least you start having ideas, getting inspired about what you could do.
So we are recording this July 1st, 2025. The book is very hot off the press. So I assume the writing process was a little bit of a stretch, but you caught most of the like latest AI developments. So maybe as a concluding questions about the content, to what extent do you also capture or touch AI tools, or how AI might change how legacy companies can lead the platform revolution in the future?
Well, let's say that Gen AI changed a bit our plans. We have, I have a dream. And the dream is having 7 books on platforms before the end of the career that originally should be something like Platform Thinking and inspired by the Harry Potter series. And joking aside, we were pretty much convinced that the next research area would have gone into the intersection with leadership. We both have an history in leadership research, and something that we found out studying Siemens, Eni, and AXA is that there is a huge innovation leadership activities, people that are perfect representation of what innovation leadership means, that developing platforms need to do something slightly different than guiding another type of innovation project. It's still there, it's still in the pipeline, but it's not the next research project we are jumping into because of Gen AI. We have an amazing case that is not in the book, that has been developed with a friend that we found out thanks to Thinkers 50 first, and then thanks to LinkedIn actually. That is the case of Fujitsu, that is using, now I'm not entering in the details, but it's using Gen AI to do something of what Tommaso was mentioning. So to reduce internal frictions in the realm of knowledge management and internal processes, generating an internal platform. That is probably the next big thing we are trying to explore from a research perspective. The case is mentioned anonymously in one of the chapter in the book. But even though we haven't touched that area because we believe it's too big, it's not fitting in there, there is a bit of Gen AI in the book. And it's the part three. We are very proud of part three because it's kind of closing something that began with the first book that was a practical support to managers that want to develop a platform. In the first step, in the first book, we put there a bunch of tools. Here, we have a full methodology, a full process that has been experimented with almost 30 companies over the last 3 years within the Observatory Platform Thinking Hub, and helped us in designing the methodology, testing it, and refining it. You know, this podcast, we know it, as also many scholars listening. So I would like to spend a couple of words on the methodology there. We moved from the usual observation of the success of cases that are out there to an actual proposal. In technical terms, we moved from mode one to mode two. Research, entering in the world of design science research. We tested this platform thinking journey that is a four steps process supported by a card set that will be out quite soon on Amazon as well. And over the last year, we experimented a Gen AI co-thinker. We developed it, this idea of the co-thinking with other friends from Thinkers 50, who are Elisa Farri and Gabriele Rosani. And they helped us in understanding that no matter how much clear is the methodology to us, no matter how much clear are all the definitions on platforms, the steps, and so on and so forth, a manager that is coming from procurement, that is coming from HR, that is coming from strategy, that is coming from innovation in automotive or whatever, need help to understand the complexity of the switch of mindset we are trying to do. So next to the car set, next to the process, we develop a MyGPT that is trained on the process, on platforms, on the various flow to support managers in the application of the methodology. We experimented it in the last edition of the Observatory, and I must say that the results have been far beyond the expectations we had at the very beginning. So even though it's not there as a topic, it's there as a tool.
Yeah, you know the first question, the opening question, you also know the closing question, and Daniel, you just answered it, right? I'm glad to hear.
I was too much in the guest position and not thinking about our own format.
I'm very glad to hear that your research pipeline is not drying out, but that no, you have like definitely. The AI part, AI and platforms coming, like turning in on your lane, and then the leadership part is moving a bit further away, but still on the roadmap. So maybe we this time close it with a different one, which is not a question, but an invitation to the both of you. So my question to you, is there anything that you would like to share in addition to the books with the audience?
I think there is one thing. I think that there is something that is not clearly said until now, but we got a dream, and the dream that we have got, I don't know if it is a dream, it's a vision, it's something in between, but it is that you know, we started by saying startups, they can do these platforms well, and then we said, okay, but it's not true that only startups can do platforms. Also, legacy companies can do platforms. And now we are somehow switching. And it is, we actually think that legacy companies will drive and lead the platform revolution. It's not just that they can do it. No, they've got in their own companies, in their own belly, they've got such a big, huge quantity of idle assets that can be easily used and used to create value, and you know, you can unlock the value that is locked into these assets using platforms. At the end of the day, we are coming to think that It's not that they can do it. Also, they can do it. No, no, they will lead the transformation of the world, because we also think that there are some big challenges out there. Challenges connected to energy consumption, challenges connected to food waste, challenges connected to the real big challenges. And these big challenges can be addressed by companies of a certain size once they unlock the platform-based mechanisms. There is a sort of inherent efficiency in the platform mechanisms that will allow these companies to actually do something for the entire world. So we completely switched our mind from, oh, don't worry, you can, even you can do it. You will not die, or my dear legacy company, to no, you will become a phoenix. So you will rise stronger, bigger, brighter, and more relevant just because you are a legacy company once you understand how to use the platforms.
If I can jump on this, yesterday I was teaching in an executive MBA, and for the first time I used the OpenS teaching case, and someone actually took the start talking and shared that a bunch of years ago tried to develop a startup that was doing something very similar, and said that I couldn't make it because the barriers were just too much. But then when you see a company with that legacy, with those roots, with that presence in the market moving, you know, the power is just so much that you can actually help in the sustainable transformation. We haven't said it, but I think it's super cool. Any, so the power of platforms so clearly that decided to open the platform to other companies that wants to bring their suppliers in as well. So they start from other used to be government-owned companies, so in other utilities field and infrastructure fields, and they grow even faster. You know, imagining something like that from a startup, it's not impossible, but it's highly unlikely. So if I can answer to your question as well, what I'd like to say is, if you hear stories that goes in this direction, reach out. Because there are more phoenixes than there used to be, but we are eager to learn more. We want to propose things, we want to develop other tools, we want to do other things, but there are so many great stories out there that could be helpful in understanding something more about platforms. So that would be my call. Many of these cases actually ended up on our desk absolutely by chance. So if you are one of them, feel free to reach out, and we would love to have a chat on what is going on.
The book is called The Digital Phoenix Effect: How Legacy Companies Can Lead the Platform Revolution Without Burning Everything Down. Authors, my two great guests for today, Daniel Trabucchi and Tommaso Boganza. The book is available, I assume, on Amazon.
Amazon, because, you know, we embrace the platform revolution going for a self-publishing approach.
Oh,
so
perfect.
We are on a platform now, Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing.
Fantastic. The first book that we were referring to a couple of times in the conversation is called Platform Thinking, also available on Amazon. We will link them as usual in the show notes. And with that, thank you so much to both of you for joining the pod this time from the other side of the microphone.
I would say thank you for having us.
And we can say it. Let's be in touch for the next season. It will arrive.
It will arrive.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.